It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe here we are almost mid-January, January 9th and 10th, depending on when you're listening to this. I know everybody was looking forward to 2021, but of course we still have a few more months before herd immunity or vaccination implementation, so we have a ways to go, but it is good to turn the corner. Want to give a big shout out to my last week's guest, Erica Munford, who talked about nutrition and wellness for the new year. That's important because you do need both. I mean, all of us like to work out, but if we're not eating the right things, we still sometimes don't get to where we need to be. So Erica did a great job both on nutrition and wellness. This week we come to my core, no pun intended. It is core meaning my real job, which is Northeast Delta Dental, and we're going to be talking about with Leanne Haney, who's one of our awesome RDHs who have helped implement the Health and Rural Wellness Program and many other initiatives at Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be talking about dental history. So, Leanne, thank you for joining me this weekend, 9th and 10th.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So let's start with a little bit of your background. You've been with us for a few years, do a great job for us. But of course, you know, prior to that, you were you did a lot of hands-on with patients. So tell us a little bit about your history. Listening audience is always interested in hearing the background of my guests.
Yeah, no, that's great. I have been a dental hygienist, clinical hygienist for many years, but one of the more interesting things that I've done for the past 25 years is I was the investigator for our state dental board and looking into making sure the safety and protection of our public was in place. And I'm an examiner for our licensing board, so I work with our dental examiners to make sure that our licensees are competent in all of their dental and dental hygiene skills. But one thing you don't know about me, Tom, is that I'm a little bit of a history buff about teeth, especially the more arcane and sort of lesser known history and facts about teeth and dentistry and dental practices from a long time ago.
And I'm a big believer in history as well. And of course, there's a lot of that history in Mary Otto's book called Teeth. And there's a lot of history related to why the rule of thumb was to go, you know, twice a year, which dates back to like the 30s with some, written advertisements from Pepsodent, use Pepsodent and see your dentist twice a year. So I'm into that as well. So let's start though with sort of your view on why for a good part of our professional life, the sort of dental was always sort of separated from medical. And, of course, Leanne has heard me speak many times as I've heard her speak many times, and we want to connect the head to the body. But tell us how that initial separation occurred and what are we doing to get it back?
Well, it's true. The medical didn't want anything to do with dental. And it was really, as you know from history, early dental treatment was relegated to the barber/surgeon. But what I wanted to share with you and your listeners today, Tom, was something that's really kind of new, and I found it really exciting. There was an archaeological team that recently discovered a skeleton, and that was of a 25-year-old male, and it dated back to the Stone Age, which is the Paleolithic time. This caveman was found in a rock burial site in Italy's Dolomite Mountains, and the skeleton had a molar. And it showed signs of having been cleaned with like a flint rock. And it represents the oldest evidence of dental treatment. And why this was really exciting for paleoanthropologists was that they believe this occurred 14,000 years ago. And it really was a finding that showed humans' first dental activities. It predated that by at least 5,000 years. So that was really pretty an exciting find. Now, how did they come to the conclusion that this molar had had dental treatment? Well, they used this electron microscope, and it showed that the man, our 25-year-old caveman, had a really small cavity, and someone had tried to dig out that rotten part of his tooth. So they had chipped it, and there were little striations that they could see on the electron microscope. Well, archaeologists found those implements at the burial site, and they were these shards of flint, and they called them microliths. So these microliths, the archaeologists used them on, you know, more recent extracted teeth. And they got the same striations and the marks that they found on this 14,000-year-old molar that they had found on this 25-year-old caveman. So what else was kind of exciting about this was that it's really rare to see decay from this time period because, as you know, the diet was largely meat and plant-based. So, you know, they cleaned their mouths with sticks. There were no carbohydrates or sugar. So it was really rare to see this in a molar. It was the first time we'd ever seen this. So that was really kind of a neat thing. Yeah, and we know that cavities really only became a problem, cavities or caries, both the same thing. And we know that they only became a problem about 10,000 years ago in the dawn of like the Neolithic period. And that's when our ancestors, Tom, began farming. So they weren't hunting, they were now farming, and they were farming grains. And we know those are carbs, and the bacteria in our mouth convert those carbs into enamel-destroying acids. So we see a lot more decay in those preserved skeletons and teeth.
Wow.
So that was really pretty exciting. So with that 3D imaging that they have, they also were able to take a look at what they found to be the first dental filling. So they had a jaw of a human that was 6,500 years old. So they put that jaw into that 3D imaging, the electron microscope, and they found a filling. Now, what do you think it was made of? What do you think that filling was?
Silver? Wood?
No, that didn't come till thousands of years later. It was actually beeswax. It was
beeswax.
Beeswax. And you know what? That wasn't really a bad choice, because it's soft and it's easy to work with when it's warmed. But when it's in the human body and it gets to be the human body temperature, it becomes solid. It also had the added benefit of being antibacterial and anti-inflammatory. So this remains the earliest dental filling that was ever discovered. And it was in this 6,500-year-old human jaw.
Wow. So, do you think Dr. Curry, our chief dental officer, uses beeswax, or does he mind his own beeswax? What do you think?
I don't know, but our friend Mr. Bosch has lots of bees, so maybe he's on to something.
That's the expression, mind your own beeswax. They were using
it
thousands of years ago. All right, well, geez. Oh, my God. And, of course, Dr. Curry and I have worked together for 26 years.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
And he is, I just want to give him a big shout out. I think you know this, Leanne, but he just recently celebrated his 50th anniversary as a participating dentist.
Well, you know, we worked together, Dr. Curry and I did.
Yeah, your husband, right?
No, Dr. Curry was wonderful, and I've known him for a long time.
Yeah.
Deserves all the shout-outs that you give him.
Yeah, no, he's awesome, and he's really helped me a lot with the veterans, of course. So let's fast forward a little bit. I know I've cut out like 4,000 years, but so I told a bunch of people we were talking about history. So one of the questions that everybody always asks is, did George Washington really have wooden teeth? So go ahead on that one.
Oh, you asked my favorite. That's my favorite one to talk about. So George Washington, were his teeth made of wood? The answer is no. And he's really America's most famous denture wearer. So he had his first tooth pulled when he was 24 years old. And his good buddy, John Adams, commented on the sad state of his friend George's mouth, saying that George attributed his unfortunate smile to cracking walnuts with his teeth when he was a boy. And in his first inaugural address in 1789, he only had one tooth remaining. So that's all he had was one tooth. And that's why you never see his teeth in any photo or any drawing ever of him. He was pretty vain about it, too. He was very self-conscious about it. And he actually met with a couple of different dentists so that they could make dentures for him. And it's said that, and even he does have one remaining set of dentures that's at his home in Mount Vernon in the museum, and they're made of human teeth. And according to one account in Mount Vernon, he paid cash for 9 teeth, and he bought them from workers that were on his plantation. So he had about 6 or 7 sets of dentures. He spent more on his teeth and on all the medical needs of his entire family and his servants. The reason why people thought they were made of wood was because they were made of ivory. And when ivory gets stained, because he drank a lot of port, they tend to take on the look of wood. So what's kind of interesting about this is many people don't know that George Washington's dental problems may have helped mislead the British Army and maybe helped us win a war. Washington...
Because they couldn't see, don't fire until they see the yellow of his teeth instead of the white.
Well, you know what? You're kind of almost right.
Okay, tell me.
Really? Yeah, well, what happened was he always had treated his dental troubles as kind of a secret. You know, again, he was really self-conscious, and he was mortified to learn that some mail that he had sent to his personal dentist requesting the dentist send him cleaning tools had been intercepted by the British. So Washington wrote in this letter to his dentist that he had little prospect of coming back to Philadelphia anytime soon.
All right, so halt right there. This is in radio business, Liam, we call this the tease, because come to the close of our first half of the program. So we're going to leave the audience wanting for more. And after a wonderful Delta Dental commercial on the importance of going to the dentist, we will conclude with the George Washington, the teeth, and maybe you could throw in the cutting down the tree as well. All right. Tom Raffio with more of the famous, world-famous Leanne Haney, RDH, and former examiner for the State Board of Dental Examiners. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. This weekend, I'm with Leanne Haney. We're having a great time talking about dental history and George Washington and caveman and Dr. Carré and a lot of. We haven't even begun to touch on Paul Revere yet, which I'm dying to hear about, or Waterloo. But in any event, let's start with. So we're talking about George Washington, and somehow his bad teeth helped defeat the British. So continue.
Yeah. So when the British got this intercepted message from George Washington, Sir Henry Clinton, who was the commander of the British forces, saw this personal letter, and he was convinced that this packet had to be genuine. So he completely moved his forces, thinking that Washington wasn't going back towards Philadelphia. And even worse for Clinton and his high command, they believed that the American and French forces would not be marching south toward Lord Cornwallis. Well, what they did not know was that that's exactly what Washington was doing. So Clinton's failure to move more rapidly to reinforce or rescue Cornwallis led to the complete British defeat at Yorktown on October 19th in 1781. So that was pretty exciting. So it was him kind of talking about his teeth in these letters that misled the British forces. So that was pretty interesting.
Wow.
This was also the time, too, Tom, that they still believed in tooth worms. They didn't believe
that. So tell us about tooth worms. That was,
I am going to
circle back to Paul Revere.
Okay.
But I want to talk about tooth worms first, and then I have my own story about Paul Revere, but let's start with tooth worms.
Okay. Well, they believed, and this all started really in Babylonian times, 5000 BC.
Babylonian times?
Oh yeah, but then it continued for thousands and thousands of years. We even see it in ancient Chinese scripts. We see it in Germany. There's all of this belief that it was a worm that was inside of the tooth that caused the tooth decay. And the worm ate the tooth, and that's what caused it to rot. And when the worm wiggled around, that was what caused a toothache. And this was really thought to be true right into the 20th century. In Germany, they believe it looked like, they have pictures of it looking like a little maggot. In Britain, it looked like an eel. There were a lot of treatments to try to kill these worms. They would touch the beak of a magpie to the tooth. They would say prayers. They would do bloodletting. They would put, they would try to smoke the worms out of your tooth with fumes from burned henbane seeds. So they really believed in this concept of the worm inside of the tooth, and that persisted for thousands of years.
Was that before the worm dance, too, you think?
I don't know, but
okay. So let's go to Paul Revere. You're not going to tell me because he had yellow teeth or bad breath somehow that helped alert us to the British were coming. So tell us how Paul Revere fits into dental history.
All right. So what do you know of Paul Revere? Do you know him as an excellent silversmith?
I know him as the man that went on a horse and said the British are coming. Did you know, actually, though, it actually was one of Bill Imbrucus's ancient relatives that actually rode around on the horse. But let me tell you why. But they changed it to Revere because it would be so much harder to say Lambrucus Ware. You know, whereas Revere Ware is so much easier to say. So even though it was an ancient relative of Bill Imbrucus, who's one of our senior vice presidents, who's worked with us for 45 years. In fact, may have been actually at Bunker Hill.
Tom? He was actually a dentist. Paul Revere was a dentist.
Well, but those days they were more like barbers, right? You told me.
Well, he did something a little bit different. In 1768, he put ads in the newspaper offering his services as a dentist. And he actually is our first forensic dentist.
And probably the first dentist that ever advertised, because for a long time, dentists that advertised were people kind of furrowed their eyebrows, right?
Yes, you're right. That goes to Painless Parker, and that's another really interesting part of history. But Paul Revere identified people based on their dental work and based on their teeth. He verified the death of his friend Joseph Warren in the Battle of Breed's Hill by identifying a bridge that he had made for him. So Paul Revere, most people don't know it, but he was a dentist, and he did a lot of work with silver in dentistry and attaching the teeth onto ivory and bone.
I knew I had silver at the right. I was just 4,000 years ahead of you, Leanne, with silver.
But seriously,
I love Revere Ware, and I'm so glad that it was Paul Revere riding a horse as opposed to Bill Lambrucus, because it would be really hard to say Lambrucus Ware, you know?
Well, Tom, have you ever heard of wedding teeth?
Wedding teeth, is that? I've heard of Waterloo teeth, but not wedding teeth. But so tell us about wedding teeth.
All right. Well, this is something that really was still popular even in the 1930s and 40s. Girls or women often had their teeth removed as an 18th-year-old birthday present.
Oh, geez. Didn't they do that in Maine for a long time, too?
No, but it was considered a wedding gift. And
right. That
way you could be sure that you would have a nice smile for your wedding, you'd never suffer a toothache, and you wouldn't cost your husband a lot of money in dental care. So they had these beautiful teeth that the husband-to-be's family would pay to have them removed. And some people actually just had and preferred to have all their teeth out from the start, and they wanted to voluntarily have dentures, believing them to be better. And it was really popular among all social classes, but particularly the wealthy.
And also the actors, right? Because some of these actors had really bad breath, I was told, in the 30s, so they went with it. No, but I was saying, I wasn't trying to be funny about Maine, but it was just like for a long time. And this is, it does demonstrate we've come a long way in terms of oral health, because there was a time where, as you said, like a high school gift was getting all your teeth removed. I mean, how ridiculous is that, if you think of it, right?
No, it was terrible. And of course, we didn't have orthodontic care back then. So if people's teeth were crooked or cracked or broken, they believed dentures to be much more beautiful. So it was only after they were all out and they wore dentures for a while, they realized how uncomfortable they were. They couldn't eat. They couldn't really speak well. They couldn't, you know, it was very difficult. And there was really nothing to be done at that point.
Created self-esteem issues, and they couldn't eat a good apple, I bet.
That's correct. That is right. And they couldn't really, really talk well. So
tell us about Waterloo. Is it, now you're going to tell me that Napoleon Bonaparte actually had no teeth? Or is
well,
that a...
Actually, Tom, this represents a very ghoulish time in the history of dentistry.
Ghoulish.
This is perhaps the most ghoulish time. In June of 18...
Oh, I should have had you on at Halloween, but go ahead.
Yeah, the Battle of Waterloo was in Belgium, and it really marks the final defeat of Napoleon by the British and the Prussians. So when it ended, and with France's it completely ended France's domination in Europe. But when the French were defeated, there were over 50,000 young men that lay dead or wounded, which is just a terrible thing to think about. And the bodies of these men who died were stripped not just of their clothing and valuables, but they took their teeth. And the people that took their teeth were called resurrectionists. And they took their teeth, and they were mostly the central incisors. And they were shipped because getting the molars out was just too difficult. To take out the front teeth were really easy. The teeth were shipped back to Britain in barrels. And they were using them to make false teeth. So in the early part of the 19th century, people with plenty of money and very few teeth were prepared to pay enormous sums for a good set of dentures. And the best ones were made with real human teeth. And there was a demand for these teeth, but it outstripped the supply. So whenever there was a war, that made up for the tooth shortfall. And there were these resurrectionists that would just follow battles and go onto the war field just looking for teeth. And that's what they did, and that's how they made their living.
So the quote-unquote 100 years war in Europe, that was a boon then for the then ghoulish dental industry.
Whenever they could get teeth, and certainly they wanted the teeth of these young soldiers because they were usually in great condition, they were white, they were young. It was better than getting them from where they were getting them from, which are the poor, destitute people that didn't have any money, and they would pay.
Or from George Washington's tomb, if you think of it.
Exactly.
And all right, so tell us, we've got to move on to St. Apollonia, whatever. I never knew that there was a tooth attached to that. So tell us about the saint.
Oh, well, that's the story of St. Apollonia. And you know what? We have a dental practice in Maine that's called Apollonia Dental Clinic.
There are
many dental practices and labs called Apollonia, and it is the patron saint of dentistry. She was in Egypt. She was an older woman that was held in high esteem. And while most Christians during this time were fleeing the city, this was 249 AD, Apollonia was seized, and the crowds beat her, knocking out all of her teeth, and then they lit this fire and threatened to throw her in if she did not curse her God.
Jeez.
Well, she refused to do that, to repeat those imperious words. And she said, please wait. And she thought she was going to think about it. But then she willingly jumped into the flames and suffered martyrdom. So from this day, the Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic churches celebrate feast day of St. Apollonia. And it's on February 9th.
Well, exactly. And unfortunately, she wasn't like the phoenix. She didn't rise from the ashes at that point. Okay, so we only have 35 seconds to talk when and where was the first dental school, and 25 seconds on the Crockett brothers. So go ahead with the first dental school.
Well, we'll have to say the Crockett brothers because that's a really good story. But the first dental school was actually in Maryland, and it was by Horace Hayden and Cal Harris, and it was the first dental school. It was called the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery.
So I think that's where Dr. Carey went.
Yeah, that's where you get the DDS.
Right.
In 1923, they merged with the University of Maryland. But what's interesting about this, there's always drama, right? And here in 1867, couple decades later, we've got Harvard School that decides they're going to have a dental school, but they're not going to call it the the Doctor of Dental Surgery. They're going to call it the Doctor of Medicine, Doctore. So now that's why you have DDS and DDM.
Right, and I get that question a lot, and basically I'm summarizing, but it's basically the same thing, and that was great history explaining how Harvard, and I'm a Harvard grad, messed that all up. All right, so I'm going to suggest that everybody read a book called Teeth. If you forgot to do a holiday gift and you want to do a surprise January gift, go online to Amazon. It's by Mary Otto. It's actually a serious book talking about how dental and medical was separated at birth. Talks about the first dental schools. Talks about the importance of oral health in terms of the systemic connection and the fact that there was actually a young boy that died because of an infection. So there's a lot of serious stuff in there, but a lot of the anecdotal things that, you know, that Leanne talked about today are in that book. And I know this is kind of, firstly, I'm trying to liven things up. You know, we're trying to move on from COVID, although we have another few months of this. So I tried to liven up. But this is a serious topic, dental health. We hope we can get the adult dental Medicaid benefit into New Hampshire. So, Leanne, thank you for being an ambassador for the excellence in oral health, being an ambassador for health and oral wellness, being an ambassador for Northeast Delta Dental, also coming into the office when I need some assistance, like Leanne was very instrumental in distributing PPE, personal protection equipment, early on in the pandemic. So Leanne Haney, RDH, athlete and scholar, thank you for joining me this weekend in January 9th and 10th. Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks. And everyone, brush and floss and keep smiling.
Brush and floss.